Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
How are you today?
I'm well. I'm very well.
On this dark, gray,
it's dreary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's bleak.
But the snow is halfway down the mountain, so the skiers are happy.
And you're a skier, so you're probably thinking,
No, I'm the mother and wife of skiers. I just go for the lattes.
That's my kind of thing.
Swoosh, 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 latte. Swoosh, 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 latte. And we have a special guest.
We do.
Good morning, Tate Flintoff.
Good morning.
Yeah. It's take your kid to work day.
Yeah. And we've had this happen. It's like, it's almost like we've had a dozen kids.
I think we've had five.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we've been doing this almost 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's worked out really nicely. We had a kid in each grade each year.
Yes.
A kid or a niece or a nephew or something.
Tate's our niece and she's a grade 9 student at J.L. Jackson. Mm-hmm. And a gifted artist. Just a little plug there. So FYI, art gallery director.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, youth show coming up 2019.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Just ba-boom. See?
Ba-boom. See? Ba-boom. See how connections get made?
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's all, that's what community is.
No, I'm just a giant piece of Lego, but I have like Lego on two sides. I connect people. Then I'm like, go with it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Here you go. Off you go. Enjoy. Yeah.
Well, yesterday was the budget referral.
Yeah.
Process at the city.
Oh, that was...
And there was a lot of Lego connecting going on because there are a lot of people in the audience who are like, wait a minute, you're talking about something I need done. And so you could see, you could watch people looking at each other like, I need to talk to you. We need to talk.
Nice.
It was great.
That is... I like those opportunities. They seem like they're going to be dry and terrible. And then you get to the end of it and you're thinking, holy, I really benefited from being in that situation.
Yeah. Maybe it's not Lego. Maybe it's just connecting the dots, right? Like,
yeah, but it's like how many opportunities do we even have these days, right? Mm-hmm. Like you've said before too, that at the end of your workday, you're tired, you want to go home, you want to put your feet up and maybe fall asleep in your jammies by 8 o'clock, right? So we're not taking every opportunity.
No, I don't want to. That's actually what I do. Except for last night when the meeting went till 9:45.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
Kind of punchy this morning.
Yeah. So sometimes those meetings seem like work, but you get to them and you're almost getting the same benefit as you would if you'd gone out to a social function.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we should have speed dating for business.
Yeah.
Just put a bunch of people in a room. And
For nonprofits,
yes,
too.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and it's, you know, have a glass of wine and some cheese and... Every 5 minutes, the bell goes off and you have to go talk to someone else.
Yeah.
We would get stuff done.
Yeah.
We really would.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're getting stuff done.
And we could communicate. Like, communication is a problem, right? If everybody's using Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, we're not really communicating.
No, we're not.
That's just ranting.
No.
That's just
bleh. Sticking a pin in a bulletin board.
Yeah.
Puppies for sale. Right? That's
it. That is.
There's no interaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of interaction,
yes.
It's a nice segue.
Oh, hey.
I like using the word segue in every show. But you're the expert on organizational behavior.
Oh, my goodness. I am not an expert.
You're as close to an expert as Salmon Arms probably going to see.
Last week we got to talking about how groups make decisions. Mm-hmm. And I teach organizational behavior at the college in the School of Business. And it's like my go-to book, and almost everything that's raised, you know, from the nonprofit art sector point of view as challenging can be found in this lovely book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
you should take it everywhere.
Yeah. I kind of feel like when
it's like conflict, chapter 4,
yeah.
chapter 4.2. Oh, here you go. This is how it works.
No wonder that whenever I have a problem, I can just call you up and you just seem to be able to solve it.
Yeah. Because I'm looking at the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all need the book.
Yeah. It's a good book.
Well, let's have a look at the book.
Yeah.
Talk,
well,
let's
give a little credit to the book. So
there's going to be some paper flipping going on.
Fundamentals of Organizational Behavior by Langdon, Robbins, and Judge. It's published by Pearson. Pearson is an educational publisher. The only publishers in Canada who are still making money, I think, are educational publishers because this puppy is not cheap. But
yeah. Oh, tell me about it.
Yeah.
My daughter's first college English textbook, which was actually looked to me like a pocket book,
yes,
was $105.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really just a little...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the good ones you keep... do you still have your university text?
I do.
I me too.
Because I paid $125 for those puppies.
To macroeconomics.
Yeah. And I actually kept a number of my art history books and things. Because Well, because the art history doesn't change much except the reference to all the male artists and all that. But yeah, no, I've probably got a box, like one whole box of our university textbooks that we haven't looked at in years. But I don't know. There's something about them. Maybe we just need to know that the knowledge is there.
Yeah. So if you're listening and you're in school, keep the books.
You might as well.
Yeah.
I'm not going to.
No,
yeah.
You always refer back to them. So, but yeah, so we just got talking about how groups make decisions and somehow, and sometimes groups go off on a super strange direction. And how do you kind of ratchet that back and get back to business?
Right? Yeah. Well, and how it even happens, because I think that's one of the things that we talk about after something really bizarre happens. Mm-hmm. We think, how did that group, how did that business, how did that board even think that that was a good idea?
Yeah. And organizations are things like families, communities of faith, political parties, government, business, nonprofits, galleries, you know, we're all part of it. So yesterday in class, I had my students make a little Venn diagram of all the groups that they belong to.
Oh.
And one of my students said, "That's one weird looking flower." Right?
Yeah.
Because I'm on a team and I work in a store and I belong to a church and I'm in a family and I'm a member of this or, you know. And so we're all unique as individuals, but we're all part of this big Venn diagram and all of those circles behave differently. So we're always kind of surface acting like, okay, when I'm a quilter, I'm this way, but when I'm in church, I'm that way, and when I'm in school, I'm this way. Yeah. So
wow.
Because every organization has kind of a quote unquote personality.
Yeah.
And a set of values and right?
So that was an interesting thing because I only did some very like 1 minute research on this and that beliefs and values and attitudes, which every individual has, are also can be applied to organizations.
Absolutely.
So organizational beliefs, organizational values, and organizational attitudes.
Yeah. And chapter two.
Yeah.
Organizational beliefs, organizational values. Exactly. So, so what I wanted to say was, you know, in the fall, and there's been a lot of switch over, right? So we have a new council, boards are electing new boards. And so every board needs to go through this process of getting to know each other better. And then you have individual personalities and sometimes a personality will take over the whole situation. You have people who are stronger willed and, others who maybe don't say as much or are easily led astray. And so how do you build sort of a framework where everybody has a say? And you have the seven hats?
The six hats. I mean,
there's a gazillion theories. You could do a PhD in organizational behavior and still not even touch.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and that's, I think that's why it's an important thing for us to talk about on this show because like you said, every organization has a personality and everybody behaves differently and art sector behaves differently yet again. And then nonprofit art sector behaves differently yet again. And the different groups like theater, music, visual art, all of those people to behave differently again. So it's really actually quite challenging for the Arts Council to be able to be, you know, an umbrella to all of the, to 30 some different organizational groups that are all in different fields, different genres of the arts, and be effective for all of them because, you know, our goals, like we have our own mandate, our own goals. So how do you kind of make sure that all of those personalities are, you know, feel like they're part of the group?
Yes. How do you?
That's a good question. But anyway, that was why it's really applicable to our community, because I think you can probably reach out and touch any group. Like any person in this community is part of some arts group, whether it be literary or theater or, you know, the film society, you're part of some arts group. So you're part of some kind of personality.
Or if you're
structure.
Not, you're part of the audience.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
So it's all important for us to understand. And then as the world changes and boards and volunteers change and staff, you know, the ideas of staff in arts organizations changes, I don't know. I just think this is a huge transition.
Some boards are super powerful and the staff just do what the board says. Other boards, the staff is super powerful and the board just follows along. And so how do you achieve some sort of balance, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that everybody feels effective in their role and heard.
Yeah. And there are techniques you can use, like, in, especially in terms of group, is don't let the group get too big.
Yeah.
Yeah. And appoint someone to be the devil's advocate.
That's a really good point, because sometimes there's automatically one in the group. And I kind of wonder if it's always the same person, if it becomes kind of, you know, it's just like, hard.
Yeah, negative Nelly, right?
Yeah.
But you do need that.
You need somebody criticism. To see the potential downfalls.
And share the...
That's the black
share
hat.
Share the joy. Yeah. You know, like, hey, okay, today you're the devil's advocate.
Yes.
Other things you can do with a big group is to... If there's a problem to solve or an opportunity comes up, it's not just problems. It's also opportunities, because sometimes we're very good at solving problems, but we super suck at recognizing an opportunity and going for it because, oh, we can't do that. We don't have enough money. We don't have enough time. Mm-hmm. It's not in our mandate, but it could be a huge opportunity. So one thing to do if you're working with a bigger group is to let every individual group member on their own come up with a solution.
Mm.
And then discuss each one opposed to, you know, the squeaky wheel.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that also keeps into consideration the different personalities like introverts and extroverts, because I'm what they call a loud introvert.
Okay.
Part of the introvert part of me is the one who processes things and takes time to do that. So sometimes a 1 hour meeting isn't enough for me. No. I go away and in 2 hours I'll have something to say.
Yes.
Like I'll really have something to say, but it's 2 hours later.
Yes.
Everybody's gone home.
Yeah.
So I kind of need the space and the time ahead to consider, and then knowing that I'm going to be given an opportunity to share.
For sure. And so a lot of it is prep work, and you know, some groups make decision by instinct and intuition. Is that a good or bad thing? It depends. Like, people sort of dismiss intuition as a gut feeling, and you don't make decisions based on gut feelings, but gut feelings are actually based on experience and knowledge. You just don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Just,
and did you know there's neurotransmitters in your gut?
I wouldn't
this
be surprised.
Like a brand new scientific discovery.
Yeah.
So you have brain cells in your gut.
Yes.
When you say gut feeling, it's genuinely because there's brain cells there.
Communicating. Thinking for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, little aside.
Well, no, but that helps understand, like, you can't dismiss intuition.
Yeah.
To that feeling, you're like, no, this is the right call. Mm-hmm. Even despite all the, right? You might be getting a lot of pushback, but you just know that's the right call.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the rational decision-making world, right? Imagine, so this is the ideal, perfect world. So here's what we have to do. Define the problem. Mm-hmm. Identify the criteria. Mm-hmm. Allocate weight to each criteria, develop the alternatives, evaluate the alternatives, and select the best alternative.
Okay.
And you can't, like, we make 10,000 decisions a day.
Yeah. We get decision fatigue. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's already, speaking of decisions,
I
see the green card.
I know, right?
Take a break.
Well, okay, before we take a break, though, like, it seems to me that was an enormous amount of work.
Yes.
Does it seem to you that kind of work has to happen before a gathering of people?
Well, we'll talk about the reality versus the theory.
The textbook. One of the things that was interesting to me is, you know, when we talk about organizational beliefs, values, and attitudes, we're really talking about creating a little mini culture.
Mm-hmm.
You have an organizational culture.
Yes, and there's some sugar and some yeast and some water, right?
Yeah.
And maybe the yeast is a little past due, so it's not really doing the thing.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just, I think that when I think about it in that way, then I recognize the complexity.
Yes.
And realizing that not only is there huge things, like a vast amount of things to consider each and every time you gather as a group and make decisions, but that the factors, the experience, the history, the, you know, all of those things come into play with everybody's contribution.
Yes.
So it's, it's more than just what you're coming to the table with that day.
Yes.
The culture means that you're coming with
all of it.
Yeah. Your baggage, your history.
For sure. And just for the same reason, I mean, organizational behavior, we see it in processes, like before a meeting, what do you have to prepare?
Mm-hmm.
A report. minutes, right? So this is all part of the, so every, like yesterday's agenda, yesterday's council meeting was a 185 page agenda. Well, that's all of these things. Identify the criteria, right? Yes. Allocate weight to the criteria. Develop the alternatives. Evaluate the alternatives. Select the alternatives. So
okay,
as council, we really come in at number six.
Right.
Staff does everything. Staff and the public do everything else.
Mm-hmm. But that must make it extraordinarily challenging to give yourself all the information that you need to come at it with your own level of experience, to decide as a group, as mm-hmm. a council, how you're going to approach each of these issues. Mm-hmm. And when you've got 20 different organizations coming to you and they all have their own personality. Yes.
I know. It gets messy.
It is messy.
Right? So another thing you have to know about the rational, it's called the rational decision-making process, is assumptions of that model. So first of all, you have to have problem clarity, mm-hmm. right? Which is from the get-go, it can be a big deal.
Well, that is kind of interesting because sometimes I've had issues, I've had a problem or several problems all mixed into one, whatever it is. And somebody like you, who's been very helpful at this sort of thing, says, okay, well, let's really identify what is the problem. And you really have to think about it because mm-hmm. sometimes it's just a whole bunch of obstacles, but the problem is something separate.
Or it's a symptom of a problem.
Yes.
Yeah. Like I love to give the parking example. People always talk about, what are you going to do about parking? The answer is not build more parking.
Yeah.
To my mind, because really that's a symptom of how we move around the city. Mm-hmm. Right? So you can't really have that conversation unless you're talking about how is BC Transit, cycling lanes, walkability scores, right?
Yeah.
Are we giving priority to people who commute to work or car share, right? Mm-hmm. What are we doing? Just providing extra slots for so everybody can keep doing what they're doing? That's not going to solve the problem. There's only so much, you know, dirt. That's it, right?
Yeah. Not making land anymore.
Yeah, so then you have to know what all the known options are. Mm-hmm. Definitely have clear preferences and constant preferences. So as a group, right, you tend to have a preference for certain types of outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Like if you have values that are, you know, specific to environmental protection and things like that, right? Like you want to make sure you're making decisions that support, you know, the other parts of your goal and mandate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, and imagine this. That you have no time or cost constraints.
Wow. I can't imagine that because so it's not part of my world.
These are the assumptions of the rational decision-making process.
Right,
and that you always get the maximum payoff for the decision that you make. So this is not reality.
Yeah.
And that's why people always say, oh, another study, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, but these are the reasons because we need problem clarity.
Yeah.
We need to know if... And we are, I, one thing I always say, what if we had no restrictions?
Perfect world.
In a perfect world, what is the blue sky solution?
Yeah. And right? Actually, that has provided me with so much clarity mm-hmm. in some of the big ones. That's the reason the amalgamation happened between the Arts Council and the Art Gallery.
There you go.
Because there was just all these different things and duplication of costs and blah. And you just said, in a perfect world, what would this look like?
Yeah, and so that's
done.
The question around what if we problem took all clarity. Time and all cost constraints out? What would that look like?
Yeah.
Right?
But and it's interesting, how does that relate?
That's not realistic.
Yeah. But because how does that relate to money, right? Because that is probably one of the most frequent problems that nonprofit arts organizations face is the lack of sustainable or stable funding. Mm-hmm. And so if money is the problem... identifying a solution based on, okay, what if money wasn't a problem, right? Like it seems like kind of a hard...
counterintuitive.
Yeah. But. So you have to approach it, I guess, from a different different method.
Mm-hmm.
And problem clarity is still the number one.
Absolutely. What is the problem?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so under the rational model, there are all these steps and all these assumptions, but the reality is we tend to make, as I say, as individuals, we make as much as 10,000 decisions a day, right? What socks am I going to wear? What shoes am I going to wear?
Yeah.
Should I brush my teeth before I shower or after? Like ridiculous. Some of them are just automatic, mm-hmm. but others you need more, you know, what am I going to have for lunch?
Yeah.
Well, under the rational decision-making model, you would need a spreadsheet And you'd be starving before you actually made the decision, yeah. right? If you had to consider all the alternatives.
But do you know what's so funny? Is when you're suffering from decision fatigue, mm-hmm. it's hilarious the kind of stuff that can happen. Sometimes it is the simplest decision that stops you up.
Yes.
And makes you just...
I can't do it anymore. Yeah, like,
just okay, can I tell a story?
Yes.
So we're getting ready for the AGM. We're getting ready for the Arts Council's AGM. We've got a brand new board too. It's actually very exciting. But we were getting ready and it was just, there was so much work ahead of the AGM, right? Like writing the annual report and printing all the materials, old minutes, new minutes, getting all the, financials, you know, the slate, the setup, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And so at one point we finished the board meeting that's right before the AGM and Astrid, who you've met before, my wonderful program manager, we were all running around getting ready. They put the food out, then this happened, that happened. And then she said, as people were starting to come in, should I put some music on to have in the background? And I just stared at her and went, like I couldn't make that decision.
And she just looked at me, evaluate the alternatives.
And she just looked at me, I'm going to put some music on. And I said, okay.
Okay.
And I walked away because I was done.
Yeah.
Done making decisions. Yeah. I couldn't even think of the one simple yes or no response. So I recognize that, you know, we really kind of have to save ourselves in a way, right? Like Barack Obama did.
And you have to rank, like Barack Obama did. He never had to pick what suit am I going to wear?
Yeah.
What shoes am I going to wear? What am I going to eat for breakfast? All those decisions are made for him so they could keep the brain power for like the big stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are we going to do about Iran?
Yeah.
Right? Okay. That I can figure out. Yeah. But the truth is, in reality, we tend to use a bounded decision-making process. So there's boundaries around, right? We're not considering every single lunch option.
Right.
In Salmon Arm, we're considering what can I eat in this block?
Yeah.
Right?
Noodles or pie?
Yeah. Noodles or pie or askews.
Yeah.
Right? Or a sandwich, right?
Yeah.
Or and so bounded rationality is more likely what we use, but we have to rank the severity of the problem. Like if you have to put a man on the moon, you probably don't want to go with intuition or bounded rationality. You need the full meal deal.
Yeah.
And when Kennedy said, we're going to put a man on the moon in the next decade, guess what? There wasn't really a cost. There was a time, but not really a cost.
Right.
Like you fellas, mostly fellas, you do what you need to get done because we're doing this.
Yeah.
Right. Now, those are some fun projects.
But, yeah.
Yeah. But the reality is it's generally a bounded rationality. And those boundaries have to do with the organization's values, attitudes, and beliefs.
Right.
Right? And then intuition, you can't discount intuition. It's not necessarily rational. But, you know, it's just your gut.
Yeah.
And all your experience. And which all is your knowledge in one kind of poof.
Which is why you want diversity of voices in a group.
Yes.
Because you're pulling from all of those experiences and knowledge and understanding and coming from different backgrounds.
Yeah. And then to make it even more complicated is everybody has a...
What? Opinion?
Bias.
Yes.
And the worst part about bias is most people don't realize I'm biased.
I know.
But we think absolutely we're not, but all we are. We absolutely all are biased.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if you know what your bias is and you check for it, right?
Hey, can you do that? Is there a process that you can kind of...
Yes, for sure.
Is there a little game you can play?
Yeah. Am I biased? And so bias also deals... then you layer on top of bias ethics, right? So how does your organization make ethical decisions? So you have to check for bias in there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's tons. It's so scientific. There are many different types of biases. There's an anchoring bias. There's a confirmation bias.
What?
Well, so confirmation bias is you only listen to people who agree with you.
Ah, yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And an anchoring bias is, well, I heard that one thing and I'm holding on to that.
Ah.
Right? Availability bias is like, well, I saw it on Facebook. I saw it in that one place.
Yeah.
And that's enough for me. I don't need to dig any deeper. Right?
Huh.
Yeah. Or I heard it or I'm told or, right? And so I find this interesting because at council we get a lot of that kind of, people will present and say, I heard that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not telling us who told them. They don't know. We don't know when it was told, why it was told, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to make decisions if you're coming in with a bias.
Yes.
Yeah. And then there's what's called escalation of commitment bias, which is you're so deep into a problem that you've thrown so much money at it, you just can't stop now.
Right.
And so I the example I give is Sightsee.
Yeah.
That was a, you know, they were so far in that they couldn't actually get out.
Hmm.
Yeah. A randomness error. You're just like, well, I didn't make that decision because it was like the Friday the 13th and I don't make decisions on Friday the 13th. Right. I mean, random, right.
Mm-hmm.
Or
Scorpios and retrograde.
Yeah, exactly. And that risk aversion can be a bias. So you would rather things stay the way they are than take the chance to make them better.
Oh, I love this. And you know what's really exciting? So a whole long time ago.
So if you have
also very scientific
risk aversion bias on your board, there's some opportunities that will just go to somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What you said, when somebody says, but we've always done mm-hmm. it this way, then you know it's time to change.
Mm-hmm.
And what I know has been very successful is that I was telling a story to my kid, and then she said to me, well, you know, if you say you've always done it this way, then it's time to change.
Yes.
So I'm like, okay, you know what?
It's time to change.
Yeah.
And then there's some hindsight bias. I knew it. I told you, right? I knew it was going to rain today. Right. So, and these are just, I mean, we're human and we're trying to negotiate all these decisions, but and these things just pop up to kind of help us get through that.
Yeah. But how do you, I'm worried about this because now I kind of feel like we can say it, we're all biased, but then how do you know how that's affecting your decisions?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to be able to go through some exercise to learn what your biases are.
Yes.
And would they change? I suppose they would change depending on the topic, right?
They would change. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would have to, But I think in terms of approaching a specific problem, you would have to identify your biases in relation to that problem.
Yes.
Before addressing the problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that, you know, that comes down to board training, and boards are trained in Robert's Rules of Order, and the meeting will happen on the second Monday of every month and will begin at 4 p.m. And,
yeah.
Right? But we don't train them in decision making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. Yeah. Maybe that's another role that the Arts Council can take on.
Well, I mean, I think every board should get, organizational behavior for dummies, like decision, like, no, seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but that's why I brought up the six hats way back a couple mm-hmm. years ago. And we had that whole show about that,
mm-hmm.
I think we had a meeting on air that same day.
Yes. Yeah.
Because you can break it down into some fairly simple components as long as everybody agrees to be able to play that role for that meeting.
Yeah.
But I did sort of try it with another group that I'm involved with on a more informal basis. And man, it was like everybody forgot the process 5 minutes in.
Yeah.
And then I had to remind.
Yeah.
And then everybody forgot again 5 minutes later. Like, we are trained to behave in certain ways.
Yes, we are.
And it takes a lot of work to untrain ourselves. Well, our next section on this topic is about...
Well, we talked about how groups make decisions, mm-hmm. right? And then we talked about the decision-making process, the rational decision-making process, which is not used. I mean...
No.
No.
It doesn't appear to be,
typically
except in a very formal situation.
Yes, yeah. Or like big stuff, like war and space. And
we hope.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's typically bounded rationality, where you're making decisions with boundaries around them.
Yeah.
Or intuition, right? Mm-hmm. And then how do groups make decisions, and how do the bias, the individual biases, impact those decisions, right? Mm-hmm. So then ultimately what you want to be building is an organization that is committed to ethical decision-making behavior,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that really depends on who's at the table. So, in life, we all go through different stages of moral development, right? And so there's pre-conventional, where you do what you're told so you don't get hurt, right, mm-hmm. or punished, right? Then there's conventional behavior, where I'll do this for you, and then you'll do this for me. And then there's principled leadership. So boards tend to have to grow into that principled leadership, P, piece, but you don't, it's not like you go trip one day and, oh, hey, look, I'm a principal ethical decision maker now. Right. It really comes down to training and boundaries. And yeah, so that's the important part. And I mean, ultimately it's because you're trying to solve problems. Mm-hmm. And so how do you solve problems? Well, it turns out that most problems are as a result of what?
Conflict?
Yeah.
Which miscommunication.
A lack of communication.
Yes.
Or an absence of communication. So how do you, and this, I find this fascinating because everybody's like, well, this is the kind of problem solver I am. A well-behaved organization understands that you have to use different conflict resolution methods depending on what the problem is. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So if you go to an emergency room and you're having a heart attack, now is not the time for the doctor to say, okay, Tracy, let's talk about this. So here are our options. How does this make you feel? Yeah. No, it's like, stat.
Yeah.
Right? Or if you're in any kind of emergency situation, right? So there's different, and people need to, I think leaders need to understand that true leadership is not about, this is my style. Mm-hmm. And we see that in election campaigns. Well, my style of leadership is my way or the highway. Well, that will work in some cases, but it cannot be the only tool mm-hmm. in the toolbox.
Yeah.
So some of the, obviously there's forcing, like this is what we're doing and we're doing it now.
Yeah.
And that would be appropriate in that emergency situation.
Right. Which it's interesting to note though, like is somebody in your organization the person mm-hmm. who just would do that? Is that always your chair?
No.
Is it, right?
Not like necessarily.
It's the person who has the most knowledge of that topic.
Well, or, I mean,
it would change, right?
And in a perfect world, all leaders are capable of any of these five types of problem solving techniques.
Right.
Right. So then there's just plain problem solving, like let's exchange the information, come up with a series of solutions and pick one. Mm-hmm. Right. There's also compromising. Well, listen, I'll give this up, but you have to give that up.
Yeah.
Right. So that's more of a teenager thing. We have a teenager here with us. Maybe she wants to tell us about compromising. I'll lend you my red shirt if I can wear your running shoes. No, no.
Doesn't happen.
No. We're getting a big no.
Okay.
So maybe not a compromising problem solver over here.
Yeah.
There's also avoiding, like I'm not dealing with this.
Yeah. Run away.
And you know what? But avoiding, sometimes you have to avoid.
Well, sometimes
if it's petty and it's pointless, walk away.
Yeah.
And people don't understand. They want to fix everything. It's like, you know what? That's petty and it's pointless. And I will say to my kids, I love you too much to have this conversation.
Yeah. And sometimes the next day, if you can just put it off, the next day, it'll be less important, less urgent, less everything. And you can actually make a more rational decision.
Yeah. And you know what else sometimes you have to do? You just have to yield completely. Okay, fine.
Let go of the rope.
Let go of the rope. And so to be an effective leader in an organization, you have to have each of these tools in your toolkit. God, I sound preachy. I don't mean to. I find this topic so fascinating.
It is. And it's nice that you know about it and that you can be approached with every, you know, like with all these questions and you just understand the structure of how this works.
Yes. And different situations call for different, right?
And again, you see, I think that this has been part of who you are. This is part of Louise's genetic makeup, is organizational behavior, because you've been saying a lot of this stuff to me for years. Like you're the one that gave me the let go of the rope
thing. Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's so good to let go of the rope.
It is.
I'm looking for a graph, my favorite graph. I don't know what I did with it. Okay. Tell the let go of the rope story.
I'd have to name names, but I was going through a situation where
I don't want to name names, sometimes you fight your fight, and
I was
like,
fighting
what are
for
we fighting for
this an issue that really was a matter of about $20. Mm-hmm. Right, it was the value of the thing was $20. I didn't agree with the thing being gifted to a person with that value, and I was going back and forth saying, but this isn't, we don't have to do this. This isn't blah, blah. And that person was fighting back and it was taking up a huge amount of my time. And it wasn't really that I was upset or angry. Mm-hmm. It just was taking up my time because I was resisting. Mm-hmm. And you finally said, let go of the rope. Mm-hmm. And I let go of the rope and then it was fine.
See?
And the problem went away because it was dealt with and done and behind me, and I no longer was spending time on it. And
because if it's petty, mm-hmm. you just avoid. Like, that's it. Okay, fine. No problem.
And it seemed like I was stuck on one thing that I thought I was right. I just thought I was right. And I thought I was protecting something. I wasn't.
It's okay to be right and even, still yield or or
and it
avoid.
Doesn't matter if you're right or not.
No, no. And so basically every problem, so if you're dealing with someone or a group or something, it's ability and willingness, right? So are you able and willing? So that's one type of, you use one type of problem solving skill for that. Are you unable but willing? That's a different kind of problem solving skill. Are you unable but unwilling? Right? That's a totally different, right? So depending on what the, so there's a quadrant of ability and willingness. And you have to figure out, okay, what part of the quadrant are we in? Unable and unwilling. Okay, well then obviously we have to do a bit more forcing on this one. Or unwilling but able. That's a different strategy than willing but unable, right? So if you're willing but you're unable, that's teaching and coaching and, right?
Yeah.
And so sometimes groups are unable and unwilling. So what do you do?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you have to walk away. It just means you have to use a different leadership technique.
Right.
Yeah.
This is all, okay, before, like, we're getting close to the end here.
Yeah.
And we still haven't really talked about the concept of group think.
Oh, yeah.
And group.
Yeah.
What was the other term?
Group shift.
Group shift.
Yes. And so if increasingly we work in teams, it's all about teamwork. I love teamwork. Teamwork makes the dream work. I'm totally getting that on a t-shirt. But sometimes teams make terrible decisions.
Yeah.
Right? And so have you built an organizational, an organization where you have boundaries around how that works, right? Are they ethical? Do you are you training ethical decision makers? Because if you don't, what can happen is you are, your organization is at risk of groupthink.
Right.
And so groupthink happens when there's maybe a stronger personality in the group that overtakes the rest of the group, and the rest of the group sort of willingly falls along, right? So it's kind of like the sheep. Sheep think happens.
Yeah.
Right. And the, if you're in a sheep in a herd, you're not necessarily feeling like you have any power. You're just happy to be part of the herd. But the next part of that, that's more, much more dangerous, and I think we're seeing quite a bit of it, is group shift, where the group takes a dramatic turn. And the dramatic turn and the actions as a result of that dramatic turn seem acceptable because nobody feels like they're personally responsible for what happened.
Right. Right? Because all these other people think the same way. So it's fine.
Yeah.
So it must be okay.
Yeah. And when you think about the major, major events in history, you know, man's inhumanity to man is group shift. But I was just a soldier, or I was just a, right?
Following orders.
Yeah. Or I'm just a member of that group, or I'm just, right? And so, and that is usually a failure of an organization to adopt proper behavior.
So that seems to be what's happening in the States with the Republican Party.
Yes.
Is that the entire organization has shifted because they, such a significant number of them believe that they're right. And so everybody can follow along.
And, well, the whole mega phenomena is really group shift. So by putting this hat on or by going to this rally, they feel like they belong to something bigger than them, or they don't actually have to take responsibility for that.
So how does that get pulled back?
I don't know.
Yeah, I guess if you had the answer to that, you'd be...
Yeah. I mean, I do know that it's... every action has an equal reaction, right? So, I mean, it's just physics, you know, and we saw last week at the midterms that there was a pushback against that. But the opposing side can also be equally guilty of group shift. So what happens is if there's two groups in group shift mode, there's not a lot of rational decision making going on.
Right.
Which I think is what we're seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that is interesting. And that's why we started, that's why we talked about this week, is because you mentioned that last week after the midterms. And so for me, I just think about how can this get turned around?
Yes.
I can't figure out how to turn it around.
Yeah.
Not that I'm responsible for turning it around.
No, of course.
But how would a professional team of people be able to go into the leaders of those organizations to say, here's how we turn this around?
I think it might be too far gone for them. It's got to be a new group.
Yeah.
A new group that has the proper boundaries, right? And the proper training. And we need to be teach. Okay, Tate, you just have to say yes or no. Do they teach you how to make decisions in grade 9? Yes, no.
I don't
know. We don't
I'm kind of wondering if, yeah, if you're
do,
not even
have
sure,
you ever
then I'm
heard,
guessing.
Do they teach you about ethics in grade 9? Maybe not yet. Like how to make a decision that's right? The right decision in the right way, like not stealing stuff and...
Yeah, not just following
sort of
rules, but...
We're not sure.
If something is vague and in the gray zone, how do you make that decision?
Right? And so this is what's...
If we're not training them at this age...
Yes. And I mean, debate club. And do they have debate clubs in high school? Maybe? Oh, question mark, yeah. So those are important. Like, we had to debate. I mean, I don't want to... We had to walk both ways uphill in the snow with no shoes on. I don't want to do that. I think these kids work hard and have a lot on the go and are impressive. And I look forward to when they'll be adults and making decisions for us. But
it just might be a problem, like a symptom of a problem that we never saw coming when you didn't think that the importance of things like debate clubs.
Yeah, we're people, not sheeple.
Yeah. But if you didn't place any importance, if you didn't see the result of it, like we just, maybe we all as a society assumed we would all figure out how to make proper decisions and therefore was like, oh, we don't need a debate club in school. What do we need that for? We don't need the arts.
They,
we don't need theater.
Google
we don't need
it.
Any
they
of
can
that.
Google it.
So let's just focus on the three R's and we're done.
Well, the problem too is if you think about the sort of the narrative of society now, we talk about followers. Kind of freaks me out a little bit.
I know. It's so interesting, isn't it?
It's like a measure of your strength. And you can't be a leader without followers. I mean, followers are why leaders exist.
And
no
followers,
question.
And followers are basically saying, my beliefs are the same as your beliefs.
Yes.
I'm actually putting myself under your guidance because you might know a little bit more, but I basically believe what you believe.
And now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Well, today, our dramatic moment, it seems like it's unrelated, but it's a pretty big moment in the arts sector in the world because Stan Lee died a couple days ago. 95 years old. The creator of the Marvel Universe.
Wow.
Yep.
I at first I thought he was just the Spider-Man guy, but no.
Oh my gosh, no.
No.
So one of the interesting things I learned about him was that he worked at a comic company. I can't remember the name of it. It was something interesting.
Yeah.
For 20 years.
20 years.
And then he basically was like the day that he was going to quit his job because he's like, I'm done. Like, this is not even fulfilling my life. Mm-hmm. He was asked to create a new superhero. And what he did was...
Coolest job ever.
Yeah. What he did was that's when he created the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And he not only did he... create the Fantastic Four, he created flawed creatures, flawed beings. And so before that, the superheroes were all very square and very righteous and they knew stuff and they had their life together.
Yeah.
But Stan Lee created superheroes who had problems, who were a little bit messed up. Like Spider-Man had dating problems and, you know, he was worried about acne and dandruff. And, you know, the Hulk had issues, right? Like all of these superheroes had problems.
Yes.
And that was the first time
that a superhero was human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was flawed.
Well, they're fantastic because they're flawed.
Yeah.
You show me a non-flawed person.
Exactly. Yeah. So there was a huge shift there that we maybe didn't have to aspire to be perfect beings because that's never going to happen.
And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, he drew cartoons and told stories, but he also led many generations in terms of how to make an ethical decision, right? How to show leadership.
Well, exactly. Because
how to put yourself, others ahead of yourself, yeah. right? So,
and he did a lot of, did you hear about Stan's soapbox?
No.
Oh, there's a little tiny square in the back of the comics that he used to do in the 60s. Really? Of course, it's the height of the civil rights movement. Yeah. So he would have a little statement in his Stan's soapbox. Cool. And it was often about civil rights.
Yes.
And that we need to collectively understand that each individual, you know, should be judged on their own merits, mm-hmm. not as a race or a class mm-hmm. or, you know, anything else mm-hmm. like that. So that's pretty brave back then to stand up and say that.
Yeah. And as I say, you know, there's so many people who have that comic book story.
Yeah. Yeah.
I used to spend my money on those comic books, right?
Yeah.
It's really, it's a loss, but I mean, 95, way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was, famous for having cameos mm-hmm. in all the Marvel movies.
In all
of
his movies.
And apparently he's got like 6 cameos in the can. So he'll still be appearing.
So he'll still be with us.
In the next few Marvel movies.
Yeah, exactly. So you never know where.
He created the first black superhero. Yeah. He created Black Panther.
Yeah.
And the whole Wakanda universe. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, the guy was really brilliant.
It's brilliant.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. And huge contribution.
Yeah.
And put others ahead of himself. Mm-hmm. And was hopefully ethical. I mean,
yeah, well, you know, there's people like that that have minds that continue to expand, mm-hmm. I think, right? They mm-hmm. they absorb information. They dive into interesting topics. They really research.
Yeah.
And instead of just pulling stuff out of their
for sure. What? And if you're wondering, like, you can follow the ethical grid. Is it self-serving? Yes, therefore it's not ethical. Will it achieve the outcome? You know, there's all these sort of ethics trees you can follow to decide whether or not you've made the most ethical decision. Or you could just say, what would Spider-Man do? Right? <Yes. laughs>
What would Spider-Man
do? What would Spider-Man do?
WWSD.
Yes. because really those stories are, and that's what storytelling is. It's a way to sort of organize thoughts and feelings in a narrative that makes sense and that provides guidance and leadership and, you know.
Yeah. So. And we also want to see ourselves in the story. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to see yourself in the story. Okay, whether you say that out loud or not.
A superhero, who would you be?
It would be supernatural to say Wonder Woman, but because yes. sometimes I feel like, oh my gosh,
she was awesome. And she had nice bracelets.
She had, and this is the thing, right? Like, I feel like that part God, part, you know, mm-hmm. mortal works well for a lot of us because it kind of makes me feel that way. And then just the fact that it didn't feel to me like Wonder Woman was ever treated like, you know, like a woman, mm-hmm. like was never, she just didn't stand for that sort mm-hmm. of thing. So I would just choose to be that because then you're just an individual.
Yes.
You're a super powerful individual doesn't get judged because of your gender, mm-hmm. but instead, you know, on your
actions.
And how
did she get her powers? Because a lot of these superheroes accidentally become heroes. Like, I got bit by a spider and now I'm a superhero.
Well, Wonder Woman is actually part God, right?
Oh.
I
don't know.
Amazonian.
I see.
Yeah, she's... Okay. And so I think she was Amazonian. Her mom was Amazonian and her dad was a god.
Yes.
Maybe that's what it was. So she was an unusual being.
I see.
She's only one of a kind.
Yes,
kind
yes,
of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Because you're not really allowed to have, you know, relations with gods.
No. No.
Just like all the, you know, in the Percy Jackson universe, right? The, what are they called? Demigods.
Okay.
So they're powerful because they were mortal and like they're the product of a...
Yeah.
Of a mismatch. Hmm. So, but, you know, I just feel like being able to transcend the gender situation would be a superpower.
Hmm.
Yeah. What about you? Who's you?
Well, I'm a big fan of Batman and Robin and Catwoman, and I don't know why. Catwoman was bad, though, wasn't she?
Yeah, but it doesn't, I mean.
But there's Batgirl,
that's just the story.
Too.
Yeah.
And it's probably because I was little when that first live series.
Oh, right?
But it went from cartoon to actual people.
Yeah.
I mean, like
Batman
Adam
West
was the first. Yeah. Bam. Poof.
Yeah.
You know that, all the
sap.
Sap.
Powie.
Yeah. Yeah. Same bat channel. So I, for some reason, I identified with that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, I guess, like I said, if we see ourselves in the character and see ourselves in the story, we've got somebody to relate to.
Yes.
You don't feel alone in the universe.
And I like the idea of having a butler and a cave.
Well, that is a super awesome part of that Batman reality.
And to be secretly rich and, all that, nobody knew.
And all that technology at your fingertips.
Yes, exactly. Let's just do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just, having somebody like, you know, who was it? Michael Caine at your disposal.
Totally. Yeah. And I don't know, the music, I must have watched it when I was little, because I can hear the music in my head now. Hmm. I totally identified with that universe. I don't know. So, and that bad guys were obvious.
Yeah.
Like, normal looking people weren't bad. You had to be like the Riddler or the Penguin or, like, you could pick them out in a crowd. Like, hey, you're a bad guy. It was easy, right?
Yeah. The simplicity of that.
No innuendo. No, did I read them wrong? I mean, obviously, look at him. He's an evil penguin. Of course he's a bad guy.
The guy's got a super bad makeup job. Yes. That guy's a bad guy.
Yeah. A terrible green outfit. Right?
You're right.
Yeah.
I guess maybe we needed clarity back then.
Yeah, it was clarity of problem. Like, problem, clear, right there. Yeah. 6 o'clock.
Whereas now, we kind of enjoy the complexity that somebody might be a good person on some levels and a bad person on other levels.
Well,
and
then
you have to make judgments. You have to decide. And, exactly. And of course, that makes it really hard for the good guy, like the superhero, to actually make decisions. I'm just going to string this guy up by his feet.
Mm-hmm. And it also teaches problem solving, because Batman and Robin had to figure stuff out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they would sit and talk about it.
They're mystery solvers.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then what about this? And then what about... And then Robin would go, aha, I have it, right? So I guess the idea that everybody can contribute to the solution. Yeah.
And most of the problems were because of bad scientific experiments gone wrong.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So people messing with stuff they shouldn't be messing with.
Yes.
And then they make this horrible thing happen. Yes. You turn into a creature.
Yeah, and so chances are we're making most of our decisions based on our love of superheroes. So we have Stan Lee to thank for that.
Yeah. It's kind of, I just feel like, that the more complex the world got, the more complex superheroes got.
Yes.
And I love the Marvel Universe. And, like, I have to admit, like, Thor's my favorite.
Really? I'm still stuck in 1960, 67 or 68, but anyway.
But I feel like sometimes when I talk to people who've never watched any of those movies, they're like, it's just the comic books coming back for a big franchise.
Trouble suspending disbelief, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a guy in a suit. Come on. Silly outfit.
but it made sense, right? And I think that, like I just said, like when we see ourselves in stories, I think it makes us feel really grounded.
Yeah.
And there's a diverse cast of characters now, right? There's everybody.
Yes.
I mean, the only thing is that there's still a bit female low. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not really... And, of course, you know, Black Widow is, like, she's got a gun.
Yeah.
You know, they don't really give her much, except she's super smart.
Well.
But, you know.
Take what you can get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still feel like diversity has been...
Yes.
Addressed in a big way.
Is being addressed.
Is being addressed.
Oh, okay. So, speaking of superheroes...
Our superhero engineer has decided that it's time for us to be signing off.
And we couldn't be on the air without our superhero,
sponsor. Yes. Everybody's a superhero who stands up and does stuff that's right, you know, that's good. And
you don't
supportive.
Have to wear green tights and a cape.
Or a cape. No. Although we just about wore a cape that day.
Cape.
Because we were caped crusaders.
We were. Yeah. We should wear capes.
Solving crimes.
Don't you think, Tate, should we wear capes?
Yeah.
We should bring capes back. Okay, let's do it.
Okay.
Cool.
We're on radio, Louise. We can't do that.
Even better.
We can wear capes in our jammies.
Yes.
That would be good.
Oh, jammy capes. Awesome. Wrap them as a blanket, right?
We'll just wear blankets. I'm in.
Shh.
Okay.
A blanket is a cape.
All right. Let's thank our sponsor. Thank you to Brad DeMille at DeMille's Farm Market for being an awesome sponsor. You can get a variety of wonderful things at DeMille's. And I heard that. See, I should get my facts straight before I make this
affirmation
claim
bias
or whatever, but that Rogers Arena might return this year.
I have actually heard that as well.
Yes. Oh, so do we have a bias that if we've heard it twice,
yes,
then it's like, it's real.
Now we have
real.
A confirmation bias. No, Tracy told me it's happening. Now it's up to the universe, the climate gods, to make it cold enough so we can.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a drier winter than usual. So I don't know if that means colder, but... You know, if it's If it's not raining, that
we
helps.
We shall soon find out.
Yes.
Yes.
Anyway, it's been a lovely thing. And so I thank you for sharing all of your organizational behavior with us.
Fundamentals of organizational behavior. And thank you, Tate, for being here. Mm-hmm. We've got the thumbs up and we're going to carry on our day and.
Yeah. So opening of Dark Nights is happening this week.
Yes.
So installing that show right now, it's crazy because lots of new technology mm-hmm. being used in the pieces.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's going to be very dark in the gallery. So you might think it's closed, but we're not.
No.
Our regular hours are Tuesday to Saturday, 11 till 4, but we're keeping it really dark in there so you can really appreciate all the lit works.
I can't wait to see.
Yeah. So we'll have Friday to make sure our open sign is like right out in front of the door. So Friday night, and then it runs until December 22nd, and we're going to be late. Are open late on Thursdays until 7 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah. So make sure you come in and see that.
Yeah.
And lots of other stuff going on. So check the participate page on salmonarmartcenter.ca.
And get involved and wear your cape.
Yes. Wear your blanket cape. See you next time.
Bye for now.